You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Ignition sequence start.
Oh, I'll tell you, Olajuwon has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three, hit it!
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer. Yeah!
Chris Paul puts it up.
Goes to Harden on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win, a three, he got it!
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook,
James Harden.
I know what's at stake. It's going to be scary. Not for us.
Same shots we got the other night. We knocked them down. We did. And, you know, I'll have to look at it. And, you know, we can get better shots, but I think the shots are pretty good. You're wide open. And, you know, I'm not, going crazy about the shots. I think they're okay. We'll get better, but I think they're okay.
When it's those guys, you feel like it corrects itself?
Yeah, without a doubt. And they, you know, they play long enough. They know what we need to do. As they say, we got a bunch of great outside shooters, except we play indoors. That's a problem. Just a little joke. A little joke. You didn't notice.
Mike D'Antoni keeping things light in the post-game presser after the Rockets lost to the Brooklyn Nets yesterday, 123-116, dropping the Rockets to 3-2 on the season. What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. We will hear a little bit more from Mike D'Antoni as we move through this episode. He's got a few post-game comments that we'll play back for you guys. And it's a bit of a somber episode because the Rockets did lose. But it's important to remember where we were at this time last year. At this time last year, the Rockets were 1-4. And had no semblance of a team that looked like they had championship aspirations. They came out of the gate sluggish, disinterested, and everything looked horrible last year. Top to bottom, the team just looked out of whack, or out of sorts. All kinds of whack, let's go with that. This year, there have been spurts of dominant play against every team. We've seen it. We've seen it against all five teams so far. This team has windows where they are absolutely dominant, when the shots are falling, when they're executing defensively, and at least we're seeing those windows. At least we're seeing those moments. Last year's team, we didn't have that through the first five games. There were no windows of dominant play. It was just ugly basketball all around last year. And then if memory serves, James Harden had that early season hamstring injury, and we didn't know the severity of it right away. And right when the injury happened, there was this worrying thought I'm sure everybody had where, oh no, we're going to have to rely on old man CP3 while James is out for a few weeks due to injury. Luckily, it wasn't like that. He missed, what was it, 3 or 4 games and then was back. I think it was 3 games. And we know how last season went. 11-14 start overall after the 1-4 start. James Harden dug the Rockets out of that hole with his unguardable tour antics, and hopefully that won't be necessary for this season, but the issues are solvable. They are. There aren't huge underlying issues with this team. Yes, the defense is a problem, but eventually teams aren't going to be shooting 50 and 60% from behind the arc against the Rockets. That's just not sustainable. You can call it bad luck, whatever you want to call it. But the fact that these teams have been going off behind the arc against the Rockets, it's not. There are some justified claims that it's the defense. Sure, that's acceptable. But a lot of times there are contested shots and there are Rockets players within the vicinity of whether it's a Wizards player, whether it's a Nets player, whether it was any of the players from the first three games, these teams are just shooting the lights out of the ball. And that does feel bad because you want to blame somebody. You want to blame the defender. You want to blame the defensive scheme. You want to blame Mike D'Antoni or the coaching staff. You want a target to pin the blame on because it's a loss, and losses don't feel good. You want to walk away, and you want your team to have won, and you want to be able to walk away and pump your fist in the air and say, yeah, the Rockets are a good team. Yeah, they're 4-1. They beat the Nets, whatever. And that didn't happen. So when that doesn't happen, you start digging for all the negatives. And while there are negatives, while there were some bad spots in last night's loss, defense being one of them, shooting struggles being another one, you can't expect perfection at all times. It's a bumpy road, and this team is going to have bumps along the way as they get used to working themselves into what we hope is going to be a championship contender this season. So you give them time. A 3-2 start is 2 wins better than a 1-4 start. You're still over 500, and none of these losses have been ugly. It would be concerning if they came out and were getting blown out in some of these games against teams that are kind of fringe playoff contenders. Pelicans being one of them, Wizards maybe another one, or not even Wizards being a fringe playoff contender, I apologize, Nets being a fringe playoff contender, things like that. If they were coming out and getting blown out by these teams, then yes, that would be a legitimate cause for concern. But we've seen stretches where the offense has looked unguardable. We've seen stretches where the defense clamps down in every single game. And one of Mike D'Antoni's comments that we'll hear a little bit later on is it relates back to energy. In the first quarter and in the fourth quarter, the Rockets really, they tightened up a little bit. And part of that was that huge 18-1 run that the Rockets went on in the first quarter going into the second quarter. That run was legitimate, and the Rockets clamped down. Their defense was good. Their offense was flowing. Everything felt great. And then in the fourth quarter, the energy picked up again because there was a need for the energy to pick up. The urgency was there. It just came probably a little bit too late. And that's the sense of urgency that they need to play the whole game with. You can't just waltz into a game and expect to win without putting your best foot forward, without giving the opposing team your best shot. And there have been times in every single game where the foot is slammed down completely on the accelerator and the Rockets look dominant and they look strong on both ends of the court. And then suddenly the foot comes off the gas pedal a little bit. They get complacent. They start jacking up threes. They're not driving to the rim as much. They're making sloppy decisions with the basketball. And then all of that, all the offensive struggles, the stretches where shots are not being made, where there's live ball turnovers, all those things, they are compounded by the fact that the Rockets aren't a good defensive team. And they probably won't be a great defensive team this season. And that's something we'll have to live with. But we need to at least strive to be average, because you can have an elite offense and an average defense and be a contender. You can be a championship contender with that formula. You can be in the 10 to 12 or 10 to 15, that might be pushing it, range as far as defenses go in the NBA, and have a top three offense and bank on still being in championship contention. Would we like for them to have a top three offense and then a top 10 defense? Yeah, that'd be incredible. Is it realistic? At this point, maybe not. And it's still too early to tell. The team still has time to gel. They still have time to figure things out. But as it stands right now, they're not a good defensive team. So as a not good defensive team, when you are missing your shots, when you are committing live ball turnovers, when you are struggling offensively, it compounds things, because then your defensive issues are magnified. If you cause a live ball turnover and then you have to suddenly play transition defense and you have a poor transition defensive scheme, or you're just bad in transition anyways, then that's going to show. Can't count the number of times that James Harden or Russell Westbrook turn the ball over and then there is no effort or no hustle made to get back on defense. Can't count the number of times James drives to the bucket and doesn't get a foul call, and rather than immediately turning on his heel and hauling ass to get back on defense, he kind of just shrugs his shoulders at the ref or throws his arms up, things of that nature. That's the energy, and those are some of the issues that, you know, the body language, things like that, where sure, yeah, maybe you should have gotten the foul call, but get back on defense. Don't just pick up the nearest man, you know, just actually try to get back and stop the next offensive possession by the other team. Because, yeah, it sucks if you don't get your free throws, but what sucks more is if you drive to the bucket, don't get your free throws, don't get the basket, and then you let them get an easy one simply because you were complaining about missing a foul call. And there's players across the entire league that are guilty of doing this. It's not isolated to just James or just Westbrook, or Eric Gordon does it quite a bit where he drives to the bucket and then just everybody knows what I'm talking about. He drives, thinks he's supposed to get a foul call, and his arms go shooting straight up at his sides. It's very animated. But everybody in the NBA is notorious for doing that. But that doesn't make it okay. That doesn't make it right. That doesn't make it good. And it doesn't make it conducive to having a good defense. If you're just sitting on the offensive side of the ball complaining about a foul call that did or didn't happen and not getting back on defense, the other team has an inherent advantage, whether it's 5-on-4, whether it's 4-on-3, whatever it may be. There needs to be an effort made to get back, especially off of a live ball turnover. So there are issues, and those issues deserve to be pointed out. There were a couple decent spots in last night's game. Daniel House Jr. actually had a pretty solid game. We'll touch base on that in a little bit. Clint Capella, another problem area. Mike D'Antoni, not happy with his performance. But we'll touch more on all of that in just a few moments. But first, we want to get a quick message in from our friends over at Indochino. Indochino is the largest made-to-measure menswear brand. You can start your style upgrade now with $30 off of your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering code LOCKEDON at checkout. Again, that is code LOCKEDON at checkout. And we are back to Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As promised in segment one, we're going to get some more Mike D'Antoni audio, and we're going to just go ahead and cut to that right now.
Well, like last year, I'm concerned, but we just got to do better. I mean, I think we will since we got our legs. And legs are, you know, the shooting and defense are legs and heart. And, you know, we're either laboring or just not in the people and just not there yet. Just not communication, not real sharp. Just breakdowns, you know, defensively, not getting into people, not understanding how to, you know, closing out ties. A lot of it's just energy, and our energy level is not the greatest right now.
Mike D'Antoni's comments after the Rockets' 123-116 loss against the Brooklyn Nets, Barclays Center, last night. The two things that stand out to me specifically from what D'Antoni said were his emphasis on lack of energy and lack of heart. And I think that's critical because we've seen that. And that's not a great look for a team that wants to be a title contender. A lack of heart is not great. And lack of heart is not something you traditionally associate with guys like Russell Westbrook, PJ Tucker, Austin Rivers, maybe to a lesser extent. So I don't really think he's talking about those guys. Because those three guys, they go out there and they've, whether they've, you know, had shooting struggles or maybe they're not playing their best game, you can't deny that those guys go out there and play with energy and hustle and, like he said, heart. Now, James Harden, Eric Gordon, Clint Capella maybe a little bit. Some of those guys, their energy levels haven't been great. Now, I know it's hard to criticize James Harden. The man is an MVP. And he's still putting up a ridiculous stat line even through his ridiculous shooting slump that he's been in for all but one game against Washington. But there's a question of, I guess, his ability to be engaged at times. he's got that reserved demeanor, and it's not quite as Tracy McGrady-esque, where T-Mac looked, let's face it, half asleep sometimes when he was playing a game. That sleepy-eyed look that would kind of betray how aggressive he could be on the basketball court. So James doesn't have that quite going for him, but his body language at times is frustrating, to say the least. When things aren't going his way, when his shot isn't falling. Again, I'm not inside James Harden's head, but maybe James Harden is inside James Harden's head. He's got the shooting struggles right now, and he's still finding a way to put points on the board. But whatever it may be, sometimes he's the guy. He has to lead by example. He's the franchise cornerstone, and the team looks to him now. He has to be the vocal leader, and if the defense is an issue, if effort and energy and heart on defense is an issue, then he has to lead by example. He can't just bark at the other players and say, hey, we need to try better, because then if he takes the next possession off, or if he lets a backdoor cut happen and give up an easy two to Garrett Temple or whatever, when things like that happen, it's hard as a follower in any industry, in any profession, in a sport, in a team-oriented environment. If you have a boss or the person who is supposed to be your leader telling you to do one thing, and then you see them doing the opposite, or you see them not following the same practices that they are preaching to you, then you're going to have a moment of thinking, wow, this guy's a hypocrite, or wow, you know, why do I have to do it if you're not doing it? Now, again, I'm not sitting here, I don't want to bash James Harden's defense. This is not me. I'm not one of those idiots on Twitter who brings up the fact that, you know, the Shaq and a fool defense video from years ago. No. James Harden, when he is active and engaged, is a serviceable defender. He is an excellent post defender, but he does have his weaknesses. He gets caught when he is not directly on ball, or when he's not guarding in the post or preparing to guard in the post by switching onto a big. He's not quite engaged on defense at times. He is very susceptible to backdoor cuts. He's susceptible to ball watching on rebounds rather than boxing out. And these are things that you can see. If you just watch James Harden and nobody else on defense for a few defensive possessions in a row, you'll see these things. Now, is this the whole crux of the Rockets' defensive issues this season? Probably not, no. It doesn't all just fall on James Harden and, you know, quote-unquote leading by example. God, no. Other players have to want to be engaged too. Players like Eric Gordon, who, if he's not providing anything offensively, which he didn't at all last night, 0-7 for the game, 0-5 from downtown, he had one rebound, one assist, and one steal. That was his stat line. Big ol' zeros across the board, and then 1-1-1. So if you're a guy like Eric Gordon, who his sole purpose is to come off the bench and provide a scoring punch, he's not expected to facilitate, he's not expected to rebound, he's not expected to be a defensive force, but you have to be at least passable or slightly above average as far as defense goes. You have to bring energy and effort and hustle. And that word gets thrown around a lot in basketball, but the Rockets over the years have notoriously had a number of hustle guys. Guys who, yeah, maybe their toolkit isn't as extensive as you would want it to be. Maybe they're not the best playmaker or rebounder, or they're limited physically, but they bring you what they bring you, and they excel at the one or two things that they're good at. And then they also bring you hustle. Hustle will win you 50-50 balls. Hustle will win you basketball games. Hustle will sometimes beat size and athleticism. Just because if you want it more than the other guy, sometimes you'll get it. And right now, this team isn't playing with enough heart and hustle. They're not playing like they want to win these basketball games at times. At other times, they're turning it on. They're flipping the switch, and they're really zoning in, playing excellent offense, playing engaged defense. I won't say dominant defense, because let's face it, the Brooklyn Nets did themselves no favors with all their turnovers in the first half last night. Letting guys not named Kyrie Irving dribble the basketball is probably not a great idea. As JVG did say, Kyrie Irving does enough dribbling for everybody, which was an amazing quote Love JVG for that. Same could be said of Harden, though, so I won't jab too much at Kyrie Irving. But as far as hustle goes, and as far as having hustle guys on your team, the Rockets have guys that are willing to, you know, leave it all on the basketball court. And that's something that we see time to time from James when he gets angry. And angry James Harden is a sight to behold. When he feels like he should have gotten a foul call, or when somebody's talking smack to him from the other team, whatever it may be, angry James, and it's always great when the camera pans to him and, you know, you get an up-close look at him as he's talking crap to somebody else on the other team, or just he's got his mean mug going. Angry James plays with that level of intensity and energy and heart and desire to win games that I wish he could play with all the time. Because, again, he is a more quiet, reserved guy. That's just his personality. That's his demeanor. He doesn't have, I don't want to say he doesn't have the mama mentality, because mama mentality doesn't necessarily mean you're charging up and down the court, stomping your feet, making a scene. But it's hard to tell sometimes just how engaged he is because of his overall personality, because he is quiet, reserved, and that shows on the court. That shows in his play style, that methodical, measured, exact science of basketball that James plays shows, and it reflects his personality on the basketball court.
It wasn't a good 20 minutes. To get 22, you got to play good 20. And I just, bottom line, I wasn't good enough.
That would be Mike D'Antoni just absolutely confounded at the thought of giving Clint Capella more minutes after he struggled in the 20 minutes that he did play. Now, I don't think Clint struggled necessarily. It wasn't a standout game. He was a team high minus 25, so there were some lapses there. But Mike D'Antoni definitely didn't think Clint played well last night. And again, I don't think he had an atrocious game, maybe not enough to warrant that laugh at the beginning of the media response, but that's what D'Antoni thought. So maybe Capella is in D'Antoni's doghouse just a little bit. Somebody who shouldn't be in D'Antoni's doghouse is Daniel House Jr. D-House had a really solid game, finished with 15 points on 6 of 10 shooting, 3 of 6 behind the arc, had 5 rebounds, had a steal, had a block, a really incredible block. That block was a sight to behold. Just one turnover. He played his minutes well, and he made the most of them. I want to say he had a couple buckets there at the very end off of passes from James at the end of regulation as they were trying to catch up when it pretty much looked like a lost cause. So that 15 may be a little disingenuous, but he still had a great game. He shot the ball well. He missed, that was it, one or two threes near the end of regulation that could have caught the Rockets up. But I think that Daniel House is fulfilling his role well as the starting small forward. We just need Eric Gordon to hold up his end of the arrangement and actually provide some sixth man of the year type numbers rather than this down the line 0000000111 type stuff that he's been doing, because that's not great. That's not winning basketball. That's not Rockets basketball. That's not the Eric Gordon that we are familiar with in the sixth man of the year role. Now back to Mike D'Antoni and Clint Capella. Earlier we heard D'Antoni say, as far as defensively, that the Rockets weren't getting into their guys. And we've seen what getting into a defensive player, or I should say getting into an offensive player looks like. The Rockets, throughout the playoffs over the years, have faced coaches that understand this philosophy and understand how to negate it. The Rockets have a philosophy of threes, layups and dunks, and free throws. So what do you do defensively to a team that it almost exclusively wants to ignore mid-range and shoot three-pointers? You defend them, and you literally get inside the opposing player's jersey. You body them on the three-point line, and you force them to drive around you. You give up no wide-open three-pointers. And throughout the first five games, while there are contested shots being made, the Rockets are giving ample room to perimeter players to get these shots up. An NBA caliber player only needs a fraction of a second to decide to shoot the ball to then elevate and get a clean look off. And right now, the Rockets' perimeter defenders are giving too much space. They are not getting into their guys, as Mike D'Antoni said. Now, part of that stems from, if you get into your guys, yeah, you are defending the three, but then you are conceding the mid-range or you're conceding a shot at the bucket. And those are higher percentage looks, and so you don't want to suddenly be giving up a mountain of paint points just because you're denying the three-point shot. However, there's a happy middle ground, and it relies on Clint Capella as a defensive anchor in the paint. And so maybe that trust isn't there right now. You definitely can't run that when you're doing the tuck wagon lineup. PJ Tucker is not a shot blocker. He is not a paint defender. Now, can he slide in and take a charge from time to time? Definitely. PJ is usually good for about one, maybe two good charges a game, for sure. He's very Chuck Hayes-esque in that regard, that Chuck Hayes was never a shot blocker, but Chuck Hayes knew how to position correctly and how to be where he needed to be and beat the offensive player to the defensive spot and take a charge. And PJ's very good at that as well. But in order to really cut teams off from this three-point nightmare that the Rockets are facing, where teams are just absolutely shooting the lights out of the ball, you can get further into a guy on the perimeter. You can really body up to an offensive player. You got to keep your arms at the side. Can't put your hands on them, but you can body them to the point where if they're shooting and then subsequently making three-point shots when you are body-to-body with them on the perimeter, at that point, you tip your hat. You say, that was a great shot. I could not have defended any better. But when you're giving an NBA caliber player 2, 3, 4, 5 feet of space at the three-point arc and then throwing your hand up in their face as they're already elevating for the shot, you've already lost. Those might count as contested shots in the stats books, but it's not really a contested shot. When you're giving that much room, they're going to get a clean look. So the Rockets can get further into their guys. They can play better defense on the perimeter and D up the three-point line better than they have, but it requires a bit more of a commitment in the defensive scheme in the sense that Capella's got to be ready to lock down the paint, or Tyson Chandler for that regard. And those are two guys who are very capable of doing that, but you have to have the commitment from them and you have to have the commitment of the perimeter players to not only first be engaged and active on defense and bodying into the offensive player, but you have to have the defensive scheme to match it. And the switching scheme does not really allow for that. The switching scheme, when you have Capella who gets switched onto a smaller perimeter player, Capella concedes some ground because he's got a height advantage. But still, players are elevating over him. So at this point, there are questions about the defensive scheme. There's questions about the identity. Mike D'Antoni is at least addressing it and not pretending that it's not an issue, because it definitely is an issue. And the offensive struggles are an issue too. They're getting the shots that they want, and at least there's that. We can take some solace in the fact that this team is getting the three-point shots that they want. They're just not hitting them. And at the end of it all, after all the X's and O's, after all the, oh, defensive scheme this, or we're not running enough of this on the offensive side, you just have to hit your shots. You cannot shoot 25% from the three-point line as a team that heaves up almost 50 threes a game. You cannot shoot 25% from the three-point line and expect to win games. But the fact that they did shoot 25% from the three-point line and were still very much in this game, I think that we can safely assume that when this team regresses back to the mean for their three-point shooting, we won't be seeing losses like this. Again, it took 25% three-point shooting by the Rockets, and then I want to say 59% from the Nets, something absolutely ridiculous. Yeah, 59.4% three-point shooting from the Nets. They were 19 of 32. So obviously, when you combine a really poor shooting night from the Rockets combined with a blistering shooting night from the Nets, you're going to have a loss. And it was only a 7-point loss at that. So I guess I would leave this off by saying, walk away from the ledge. The season isn't over because of one loss against the Nets. This team, the biggest question coming into this season with this team was, would James Harden and Russell Westbrook work? And I think even though it's a small sample size of 5 games, I think that it's evident that this pairing, this dynamic duo between the two, can work and has shown flashes of brilliance when it's working well. And at this point, last night's loss included, the Bucks loss included, the losses aren't at the hands of the pairing of Russell Westbrook and James Harden. And I think that's something that we should all really appreciate moving forward. Again, the issues with the defense are warranted. The issues with the lackluster offensive performances are warranted. But the biggest question mark coming into the season was, will Russell Westbrook and James Harden work together? And even though it's just been 5 games, I think that they've proven that they can work together. And with that big question already being answered just 5 games into the season, rather than us sitting around scratching our heads wondering, oh, is Russ going to keep taking all these bad shots? Russ's shot selection last night wasn't that great either. But you can't really blame him squarely for that loss. There were so many other variables and components to that Nets loss that I'm not going to even focus on Russell Westbrook's shot selection from last night. Because that wasn't the overarching issue. It just wasn't. So the takeaway is this. The Rockets are 3-2. They have things that they need to improve on, yes, but the blueprint is there for a solid team, for a championship caliber team. And there's no reason to abandon ship quite just yet. Now for this Saturday morning, November 2nd episode, this is where we break things. As always, thank you for tuning in. If you want more content before our next show, social media is where everything's happening. I'm on there at JT Gatlin. Our very own special correspondent, Mr. Bindu Bose, is on there at Bindu Bose. And of course, the show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, the website, LockedOnRockets.com, and our email address, which is, of course, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of these are different ways to consume content about your Houston Rockets. Ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show. You can place advertising inquiries. Really, you can just let me know if there's anything that we can do to improve this experience for you, our listeners. Beyond that, if you would be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts, if you could take a moment to please subscribe and give us a 5-star review. That's how you get the benefit of episodes straight to your inbox before they are published to the previously mentioned social media outlets, and then we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers and keeping this business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Again, for this Saturday, November 2nd, this is where we break. As always, thank you so much for listening, and I hope to have you back again very soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.